This is Fresh Air, and I'm Terry Gross. My guest is Garrett Brown. You've seen his work in the films Indiana Jones and the Temple of Doom, Return of the Jedi, Rocky, and The Shining, but you haven't seen him because he was behind the camera shooting some of the trickiest scenes. He shot those scenes with the camera system that he invented, the Steadicam, for which he received an Academy Award for Technical Achievement in 1977. The Steadicam has a specially designed harness that allows the camera operator to run, climb stairs, or leap with the camera and still get a stable image. Because of the camera's portability, directors have used Brown as if he were a stuntman. He was even asked to climb the Brooklyn Bridge with the camera for one point-of-view shot. Brown's new invention is an airborne camera called Skycam. The camera gives a bird's-eye view and can fly from ground level to 300 feet in the air in a matter of seconds. Skycam has already been used for nationally televised sports events and for the films Birdie and Lady Hawk. Garrett Brown told me a lot of behind-the-scenes stories about making movies and about the directors and actors he's worked with. We also discussed his first invention, the Steadicam, and what he had in mind when he dreamed it up.
The problem is a handheld cameraman inevitably shakes the camera because human beings are always in motion, hopefully. The Steadicam deals with that problem by isolating the camera from the cameraman. This object that he's lugging around is actually held by a sort of mechanical arm, which is attached to a strange-looking suit that the cameraman wears. And the mechanical arm is like a spring sort of suspension system. It just tunes out all the bumps. And then the camera itself is arranged in a sort of fundamentally stable shape. It's basically, you know, lengthened and made taller and just made more inert. Sad to say, it's an invention that barely works, I must report. It takes a good operator. I mean, it's like saying the violin works to make wonderful music. In the early days, we peddled the Steadicam as if any bag lady could pick it up and make wonderful shots with it. It turns out that it takes a lot of practice and so on. So as inventions go, I wouldn't say it's a triumph of inventing. It's somehow a triumph of things that work with people, like the violin or the skateboard or the blood pressure measuring instrument, if you will.
What were some of the first sequences that you really tested the Steadicam for a movie?
Well, for a movie, I was thrown in headfirst, just, you know, hurled right into the water on Bound for Glory. My first shot on a feature involved 900 extras and a 46-acre set, and there I was up on a crane, you know, trembling out of just pure nervousness and funk, you know, looking around me. And fortunately, they didn't make the shot before lunch, and I had a couple of beers at lunch and calmed down a bit. But I remember the operator who was looking over my shoulder at the time and who is now a cameraman shooting a Spielberg film, and he and I were just talking about this. He said, "This thing must work," he says, "because you're shaken and the image is still, you know." And I'm sure he thought perhaps the way it worked is it made the cameraman shake. And, you know,
what were some of the typical requests that you got when the Steadicam was first available from directors who realized that the Steadicam could liberate them to achieve certain shots that would have taken weeks to set up beforehand?
Well, some realized it right away, and some saw it as a stunt tool. Some were quite happy with a conventional way of making films, and except for the shot like running after somebody or running up and down steps. My God, I did more than my share of shots running after people and leaping up stairs and jumping over gaps and things and impersonating rushing POVs, you know, and all that. And there were a few people, Avildsen among them, who saw more than that in it and who used it for liberating the process of filmmaking as much as liberating the shot, because the process involves a lot of paraphernalia, doesn't it? It involves all the laying down of rails and equipment and so on. And there are my favorite Steadicam shots are ones that on screen you wouldn't know the difference. You know, they are just a traveling camera. They involve putting the lens where somebody wants it, that's all. But you wouldn't look at it and say, "Oh, wow, what a shot." What you don't see behind the scenes is that shot was made in a flash, instantaneously. You walk in, you make it.
You shot the sequence on the rope bridge in Indiana Jones and the Temple of Doom.
Yeah, there's a case where, you know, that's the only way to get a camera moving out there that doesn't look terrible. I mean, a handheld guy, if he felt the way I did on that bridge, would have been quivering even more than normal.
Can you describe the scene and the shot that you were asked to do?
This bridge was built by a company that makes dams, and they're a pretty rough and ready outfit. They built a real suspension bridge, 350 feet in the air, Yes, it had steel cables inside the rope, you know, dressing cables, and it had boards on it that were allegedly very strong and so on, but there were big gaps between them. If you didn't walk with your feet straight ahead, your foot would go right down between the boards. So that implies also that you could see down between them, and that was not a treat. I can tell you to look, you know, down 350 feet as you're lurching on this thing, and it was violently in motion. Every time Harrison ran across it, it would lurch up and down a couple of feet. And he even actually went through one of the boards at one point, and there was a great hoo-ha and uproar and finger-pointing about who put that board in and didn't test it and so on. His leg went through it, and fortunately his other leg stopped him from the rest of him from going through. But that happened just before I went out to do my thing, so I had no great, you know, confidence in this bridge with me and my extra 50 pounds of machinery, you know. It was scary. And then when all the local extras dressed up as soldiers started to run, each of them lurching about, the thing was airborne, you know.
But how did you
hold on? And it was hot,
by
the way. I held on with one hand and operated with the other. And my toes, I trained my toes to hang on to the boards. I mean, it was bad.
Doesn't that bridge get blown up, too?
Yes, I declined to be on the shot when it was blown up.
Are there scenes that you declined from because they're too dangerous?
No, very few. Usually everybody agrees generally, you know, what is too dangerous and what isn't. There have been very few. The only time I ever really made a fuss about anything was we had a shot potentially to walk up the cable of the Brooklyn Bridge for a film called Wolfen. And without inspecting the cable, and my memory of a bridge cable is it's the size of a truck and it shouldn't be any problem and so on, I said, well, all right, I'll do it, but we have to, I made some conditions. We've got to rehearse it for a day without the pressure of production. I want you to hire a mountain climbing type guy to go with me to be sure that I'm shackled and tied up right and so on. And I said, I'll try it. And due to the pressure of production, they couldn't lay on that extra day. So I said, well, okay, I will not walk up the cable and shoot. But in fact, I ended up walking up the thing anyway, holding the, you know, with the gear in a backpack, and we shot on top of the bridge. And I made very sure that everybody knew that the only way I would do that is if I was tied with a rope to a big iron ring that I spotted in the middle of the top of the bridge on a rope just short enough that I couldn't inadvertently go off the edge, because you get enthralled with shooting, and a gust of wind comes up, and bye-bye, human and sewing machine, head for the drink, you know.
There's been some tragic deaths in Hollywood recently, stuntmen getting killed, and then the deaths on the set of The Twilight Zone. Has that given you pause about risky things?
I've always tried. I mean, in the very early days, I was somewhat crazy. I mean, I would run down a steep talus slope and just backpedal and stop right before the edge and so on. I don't do that anymore. And I teach a great number of people to do the Steadicam. In fact, I'm certain probably not the best in the world at it anymore, because I have a number of other souls who are known jokingly in the business as the living masters. And these very expensive bodies are extremely good at it. But we've all, you know, I've taught most of them, and one of the emphases is, you know, to do it safely. I mean, I have not lost anybody yet, thank heavens, and I hope I don't, you know.
You also did the sequence in Return of the Jedi in the forest where these crazy creatures are driving on some kind of motorized vehicle.
Speeder bikes.
Speeder bikes, yeah, like through the trees at amazing speed. And I kept wondering how you managed to do that.
Well, I trained and trained, and I managed to run 130 miles an hour just for short periods.
Did you really?
No.
No, okay.
No.
I'll believe anything.
Are you kidding? You've been in this business too long,
that's
Terry.
Right.
You've been told too many outrageous things by too many people. It's clear.
Okay, so now
you
can tell me how you really
did it.
The way
it was done was sort of a film trick. And actually, I loved this job. I had a wonderful time. First of all, I like the tough ones. I like advancing the art a little bit. And this was a first. I got a phone call. Do you think it's possible if you were to walk along with the camera running very slowly? The idea was maybe one frame every second, okay? Well, now, if you project that film at 24 frames a second, you have sped up what I did 24 times, clearly, okay? So 24 times 5 miles an hour walking speed, let's say, is, you know, 120 miles an hour. Can it be held steady enough so that it won't look like it's vibrating and bounding around and so on? And my guess was yes. And the way it was done was quite a tour de force, really, because I had to walk through the redwoods about 1,000 yards carrying this thing, but the place that it was pointed couldn't deviate by a fraction of a degree from one side to the other, nor could its height, nor could its side-to-side position, nor could my speed, nor could its roll attitude. And the way we positioned it was we strung an invisible green thread through the woods and pulled it taut. And as I walked along, I just kept the camera within an inch or so of that thread, which is so tiny in the vast scene of all that you couldn't see it. And then I aimed the thing with a very long telephoto sort of sidefinder video camera, and I would aim it at a handkerchief or something 1,000 yards away and try and keep that in the lens with a very long lens. And now, of course, if that's still in there, then the overall angle hasn't changed much. But it was frighteningly precise work, because if I let the thing sink a foot, let's say it took 5 seconds for it to fall a foot, well, then there would be a third of a second severe bump in the shot once it sped up. So,
how many takes of that sequence did you do?
Well, we shot a lot of that. That was on, I think the sequence ran nearly 5 minutes, and I shot, of course, the background plates, so-called, and then the optical fellows matted in all the speeder bikes in the foreground. I supplied the backgrounds at high speed, and I think I must have made 14 or 15 shots in different places and probably did 3 or 4 takes apiece.
Some of the shots that you do have actors in them, and you might have to do some really tricky choreography. But it's up to the actors, too, to make sure that they've gotten the scene well, performed well, gotten their lines right and everything. Have you ever wanted to strangle an actor because you did your part and you got through this really tricky, long shot and they didn't perform well in that scene, and because of that, you had to go through all that choreography all over again?
Well, I think with all due humility, I must point out that the actors are lumbered with the idea of having to do 3-minute scenes all through a set because I exist. And you can imagine the look of dismay on the face of actor or, grip or anyone else in the set when somebody blows a line, or if I make a mistake 3 minutes in, I could cause him to have to do 3 minutes of giving his all and, the ultimate performance again, because somebody wants it in one take, And I'm not crazy about that, to be honest. I mean, to me, the cut is a noble institution. I love cuts. Audiences are used to them. I mean, I'd be happy to shoot all of it, but I like doing it in short pieces just like an actor does, for the same reason. You can concentrate on the piece, make it perfect, But when we all have to be spectacular for 3 minutes in a row, it's rough. Kubrick used to insist on numerous passes on shots like that ran 3 minutes. 50. Looking for some elusive chemistry that only he could see or appreciate, possibly.
Someone like Kubrick, I would imagine, would define to a hair how he'd want a shot framed.
Yeah, we'd have arguments about whether the crosshairs was on the center of the nose or slightly displaced in a wide shot, All of us had elected to do the film, and all of us knew Stanley well enough to know that's what the game was, and all of us were quite willing in the hopes that he would get precisely what he wanted, and all of us, including Nicholson and everybody else. But there were times when it was a matter for consideration on another planet, whether the crosshair was here or here. I even once put a crosshairs made of tape on Shelley Duvall's nose and lined it up precisely with the crosshairs. For you folks out there who just see movies in the theater, the crosshairs are on the ground glass of the camera, and they indicate the center of the frame. Well, I lined up that crosshair with the fake one of gaffer's tape and held it very steadily, and then as the shot moved on, I moved mine away, and there were two in the frame, and hers always stayed right exactly where I wanted it. This is what you get into, and after take 40 in Great Britain in June, when you're doing winter scenes that are supposedly taking place in Colorado.
So are people using less cliche shots now with the Steadicam? You said initially people would call you up initially to run up and down stairs.
Yeah,
so
it's quite fun.
What are some of the calls you get now?
Well, I get called to do, for an example, I worked on Falling in Love, and I work on very few films in the last couple of years because I have been keeping my attention on the Skycam, but I have in my deal the opportunity to do a couple of good ones a year, so it would have been about 8 months on Falling in Love called, and the shots were proceeding up the street just ahead of Streep in a place where if you made a big production out of it and laid rails and so on. It happened to be on Fifth Avenue right in front of the Trump Tower. you would draw crowds that would be unmanageable. So we basically popped out of the shadows and made the shot before anybody was quite aware of what we were doing. And I like that. I like using it that way. Sad to say, or good to say, there was another production on the same block with a Steadicam with another gentleman who's one of the living masters operating for on a Mickey Rooney movie. So their crowd control would release people just as we were trying to stop people, and it all got very comical. And then Sidney Lumet showed up and wheeled in and backed his truck up and stole a shot on our permits, and Cotton Club was shooting up the street, and the commercial was like one of those days in New York where the whole world is a movie set. It was very funny. I even walked into the wrong camera truck because they were from the same company, and there are the cases for the Steadicam sitting on the tailgate just as I left mine, and I walk in and I open them up the cases, and I was on the wrong truck. It was Teddy Churchill's truck who was doing the Mickey Rooney film.
It must be easy to lose perspective when you're surrounded by that many movies.
Fun also, though, because we always used to say there should be one of these on every corner Steadicam. So we're getting there. We're getting there. It's a fun machine. I don't know if I've ever really expressed this properly, but it is the... operating a film is intriguing, as you can imagine. And the operator is quite a deep character. I mean, he has a lot more to do than simply point the thing. But operating the film and doing the athletic routine of Steadicam, in which you place it in space as well, is fascinating. It's just about my most favorite thing to do.
My guest is Garrett Brown, who's the inventor of the Steadicam, which has been used for many, many, many movies, and he has shot many movies himself. And he's also the inventor of the Skycam, which is a brand new camera. Why did you want to go through this again with the Skycam? You have a very successful invention. It won the 1978 Academy Award for Technical Achievement. I'm referring to the Steadicam. It's a great success. Every director uses it, and they either hire you or hire someone else who you've trained.
Not every, but quite a few.
Most of them, yeah. Okay. Yeah. And then you went through the whole thing all over again of inventing something brand new, having to introduce it and market it and train yourself on it. It must have been really difficult to start again.
Well, I don't know why I did it at this point. I've had many a moment when I thought that it was a mistake to have started this, to be honest, but not lately. Lately, I think that it was a great idea to have done it again. There were times when we almost gave up on it because it was terribly difficult to do, much by orders of magnitude more difficult than Steadicam.
Why don't you describe what it is, how it works?
Well, Skycam is a... cams proliferate, but Skycam is an attempt to get even more freedom for where the lens can be, because the Steadicam operator is of necessity still in touch with the ground, at least. He has an amazing freedom laterally on the ground, and he can run around and so on. But I began to be intrigued by all that air up there, which I didn't have access to. I can get the lens up to about 8 feet, and then beyond that, it's terra incognita, you know. And I was sitting around pondering the problem that sports shooters have shooting football and so on, because all of their cameras are stuck on the borderline between the stadium and the air. Whereas, where would you like to be to see football? I mean, just one of the ways that I like to think about things is, suppose that the restrictions which we take for granted were eliminated. Where would you like to be? Where would you like that lens to be? Well, you know, it's easy. You'd want that lens to be in a little invisible helicopter that made no noise and couldn't, you know, cut the grass if it fell down. Just right over the quarterback's shoulder, wouldn't you? And you'd want to be able to go as fast as he could run and go anywhere in the field and look at anything you wanted to look at without creating a nuisance to yourself or having a big rotor blades, you know, causing anxiety among the players. And so I thought, well, that's very nice. Now, I wonder if there's any way to do that. And I thought about Mary Martin, the way she used to be hauled around on stage by stagehands, a couple invisible wires. The guy on the right, George, pulls hard, and off she goes to the right, and Sam lets out the cable and, you know, lets her go. If George and Sam both pull in, she goes up, doesn't she? So let's add a couple of more stagehands, you know. In fact, in the early days of the Skycam, we actually did fly the thing around as an experiment with four guys running around with the ropes, which came up through pulleys and down to the camera. And if you get the choreography just right, like little ninjas running around, it can be done. You know, these two guys run this way, and those two run that way, and damned if the thing doesn't, you know, drift across. But clearly the way to do it is to have a computer which knows who, God, I got caught there. I said, who knows? Forgive me, oh computer. A computer which knows the dimensions of the space exactly. So the operator has a big joystick, and he indicates which way he wants to go. If he wants to go forward, he pushes that stick down, and he's sitting up in the press box watching all this, like the ultimate video game, if you will.
You've had to try to interest both television networks and movie directors in the use of the Skycam. At the same time, there have been a lot of problems to tune up in...
To say the least.
So yeah. What have some of the demonstrations been like for you? Nerve-wracking, I'm sure.
Nerve-wracking is right. It's almost impossible for me to imagine that I would have done this if I'd known in advance how scary some of it was. For example, we took it out on The Natural, just the prototype out on The Natural. And
the movie, The Natural.
Yeah, the movie. With the arrangement that if we weren't happy with the way it was working, we would not tie up the main unit's time. We wouldn't shoot Redford and all the extras. We would just do a few inserts. And since we weren't in the way, just putting it up out there, they were quite happy to do that, so we did. And the first day out, I made an operator's mistake, a Skycammer's mistake, if you will, and I said to somebody, the computer was in the shot up in the stands, I said, okay, unplug it and bring it down here. Well, that particular version, when it got unplugged, I'd forgotten that we had programmed into it a command that if you ever lose your information, if the data stops for some reason from the computer, what you should do is take up at 3/4 of the speed of the motors up to the point where you can't go any higher. We figured that would get it out of trouble in any event. And that fail-safe command went into effect just as one of my guys was about ready to grab the camera and put a new load of film on, and suddenly, zoom, it's gone. It flew up in the air and hung there in a sort of embarrassing wounded duck attitude until we could go around and restart all the data, you know. And I realized that 3/4 of its top speed is quite fast for something to leave the vicinity of someone. I mean, it went, it was gone. And I looked over at my trusty computer programmer, Larry Cohn, who was a very cool head, basically, but not used to showbiz. And I'd forgotten that, you know, I've been tempered and bloodied on, you know, hundreds of movies. These guys that I was working with, and I have some wonderful partners in this, you know, guys who do the engineering and the electronic engineering and the computer programming and so on. But for some of them, it was their first exposure to the pressure of a film set. And I looked over at Larry, who was trying to type in the new data, and his hands were shaking to a point where I could hardly move. Well, I feel for him. I mean, I have felt the pressure at times. For instance, we showed it early on to the Olympic Committee. So we're demonstrating it in the Coliseum, showing what it would look like at the finish line of the running track. But the goalposts were still in the Coliseum because they were in the football mode. And the goalposts, of course, wouldn't have been there in the Olympics. But I had to fly very close to them with a wire leading up to that corner just to get the camera into the finish line right beside the goalpost on the side. And after a while, I got distracted by something and somebody asked me a question and I tagged the top of the goalpost with the wire that leads to the Skycam at 20 miles an hour. And it had enough force to bend the steel goalpost right around and bend it over in, like, you know, a pretzel shape. I had a wild urge to bend it back with the Skycam, but I did not succumb to that urge.
What are some of the images that you had in your mind of how you wanted the Skycam to have a point of view of flying?
Well, I you must know, of course, think or thought about the moving camera quite a lot in a lot of particulars. I mean, I have imitated many kinds of motion in my career using the Steadicam. For instance, I used it to produce the motion of turbulence in an inert airplane set in Twilight Zone, and that involved thinking what you really see when a plane is turbulent and what it should look like and so on. I've made the points of view of many things, creatures large and small. But the idea of a camera that can fly appealed to me from the beginning. I mean, the idea that, you know, with great control that you can fly around through a set, I love that point of view. I mean, I don't know if most people feel the same way I do about it. I mean, I've always wondered what it looks like to a bird, not so much what it feels like, but, you know, what it looks like. I love the potential visual idea of flying through things. And I've seen some things with this thing that just fill me with delight. Even on sporting events, you see shots that have never been seen before that are either color shots, you know, atmospheric shots where you bring the team in and then pull up you know, 400 feet, up 200, back 500, at 20 miles an hour. The magnitude of this, if you're used to a crane shot that tops off at 27 feet, is heart-stopping. We did some rock videos. We did, oh, I know what we did a Lionel Richie Pepsi commercial, and we did some shots on that that are just beyond anything that I imagined, because the thing has more grace and style than I imagined it would. I must confess that I loved the idea of what it might do, but I didn't see it big enough in my mind. I still saw it as being slightly mechanical somehow, and it has spirit. It has a wonderful grace, and you can imagine what it feels like to lay a hand on the stick and haul it back and see in the monitor what the camera is seeing yourself roaring away, you know.
How has the experience of actually developing the Skycam, marking it, and using it compared to the expectations that you had when you started?
I wasn't able in the beginning, Terry, to see much further into this one. It was almost a compulsive sort of behavior to start this project. Not being a businessman or a skilled manager and so on, I've learned a few things the hard way that I never foresaw, you know, making money arrangements and, you know, spending it wisely and, you know, managing people intelligently and so on. So I can't say that those things were in my mind when I started, and nor did I realize how difficult it would be. I mean, the thing has been brutal, frankly. I used to be twice as tall as I am now. I didn't used to smoke, so it's had its toll, you know.
Do you think you'll try something like this again? Are you anxious now to just...
Well, I have another one underway.
Oh, no, really?
Oh, it's a wonderful gadget, of which I cannot speak, so we might as well leave that one be.
But you'd go through this all again, start all over again?
Yeah, it's a habit.
Garrett Brown, inventor of the Skycam and the Steadicam. I hope you enjoyed this edition of Fresh Air. Fresh Air is a production of WHYY Radio in Philadelphia. The technical director for this edition was Ron Barron. Fresh Air is edited by associate producer Maeve McGoran and co-produced by Danny Miller and me. My name's Terry Gross. Thanks for listening.
National distribution of Fresh Air is made possible by support from the University of Pennsylvania in Philadelphia and its 16 undergraduate, graduate, and professional schools. Additional funding comes from National Public Radio member stations and the Corporation for Public Broadcasting. This is NPR, National Public Radio.